Hello and welcome to the Death of the Roman Republic's review of the 2005 HBO original series, Rome.
Season 2, Episode 5, Heroes of the Republic, our good friend Jacob taking it back to back. Jacob, you said you wanted me to lay in the beat of Drake's 2015 hit back to back, and you were going to rhyme this whole episode, correct?
Back to back, like we're on the cover of Lethal Weapon, baby.
Hey!
literally, the only thing that comes to mind. Although, you know, I still agree with Meek Mill's critiques of Drake, but Drake's response obviously was better. Welcome to what's now a hip hop podcast. Hello, episode 5, Heroes of the Republic. Ladies, gentlemen, Romanians, citizens of Rome, how are we doing today? We open the episode on a religious gathering, and we quickly figure out what religion, because we see our dear friend, and maybe you understand Yiddish, and you could hear that it was Jewish the whole time, but we do see our dear friend Levi praying, and then a slow pan over to, who is that? It's our beloved Timon. And that's all we see of him this entire episode. Next, we cut to Rome.
I forgot that happened until you just said it.
Yep. We cut to Roman forces in Cisalpine Gaul. Whose forces are they? I don't know. We see two strangers standing guard around a fire, and they hear something in the brambles, and they get up. And who is it? It's a grizzly man. It's an unkempt man. It's a bearded Mark Antony emerging from the woods with a deer around his shoulders. He throws it to the ground and declares, "Let's eat. Deer. It's what's for dinner." We cut to Varinus and Pullo. They are riding back now. They have a carriage, and Varinus' family is on board in the back. And Pullo's like, "Hey, Varinus, I know we're going back to Rome, but like, you don't got to go back to working at the Collegium. Like, it's kind of no place for children to be running around." And Varinus is like, "Well, my orders have not been rescinded. What do you want me to do? Lie and live dishonestly?" And Pullo's like, "Well, there's lies and there's lies."
I'd also like to say, Varinus is like, "What, would you have me live dishonestly?" says the head of a criminal organization.
They're riding, and they come to a stop in the road, and it turns out Octavian's men have put up a blockade. And like, as Varinus and Pullo like kind of get out to investigate more, we pan into the carriage. We see the Varinus family. Varina the younger wakes Varina the elder, and Varina the elder is like, "Hey, not yet. We can't run off without any money." Okay, so that's like, whoa. The Varinus children are not excited to be back with daddy. Then we go back out to outside the carriage. The blockade guy tells Varinus and Pullo the news that Octavian is bringing his party down to Rome. And as they walk away, they do share a real fun bit of banter. Pullo or Varinus is like, "Oh, your boy's being a bit aggressive." And Pullo's like, "Oh, but my boy gave your boy a whooping." And obviously Pullo is siding with young master Octavian, and Varinus is not indebted, but like, I don't know, serves Mark
Honor bound.
Yeah, exactly. We're cutting to the Senate. Octavian stands before Cicero. He is, of course, now asking about that triumph he wrote about. Cicero goes on. He's like, "Well, Octavian, you are a hero of the Republic. You know, Caesar himself could not have conjured a finer victory." Octavian reminds him, "I am Caesar himself." But Cicero goes on to deny him the triumph and insist that he's doing Octavian a favor because Mutina. Cicero's like, "Yeah, Mutina was a victory, but like, it was a victory over other Romans. And like, Hirtius and Pansa did kind of all the work." Where Octavian's like, "Well, the purpose of battle is to remain alive. And those two guys did not do that." But anyway, Cicero insists the victory isn't complete anyway. Antony's not dead. You know, the Senate had to send Lepidus up north to defeat him finally. And like, lastly, Cicero's like, "And the people won't like the look of a triumph. Your forces are right at the wall. It's going to be a bad thing." And actually, part of Octavian's council, Maecenas, agrees. Like, Cicero kind of got a point. So Octavian kind of cedes at this point. And Cicero's like, "Well, we'll find another way to celebrate. Perhaps a temple to Caesar victorious. And Octavian has a better idea. He's like, what if you made me consul? And Cicero's like, you're like 19, bro. You're way too young. You have no connections. You have no experience. And Agrippa speaks up at this moment. And he's like, well, he has an army. And we're like, oh, this is what we're doing. So Cicero is like, well, I'll speak to the other senators to see if it's possible. But Cicero's like, but if you become consul, you must promise that you allow me to guide you. And Octavian's like, yeah, that's fine. You know what you're doing. You're a good dude. And they seem to have reached an understanding. That is, until we cut to outside Octavian's war tent and Cicero is leaving and he's like, bumptious young fool. He will wear the purple like he wears armor, like a child playing grown-ups. So Cicero not too jazzed about this.
I appreciate that we're getting Octavian in like his more natural state. Like, you know, last episode where we had our introduction with this new Octavian, he was out on the battlefield and kind of doing war stuff, and that's not Octavian's game. He belongs in politics, so it's nice to like see him here doing what he's supposed to be doing. I feel like it gives him a much better showing.
And it speaks to his strengths. He's a thinking boy. Cut to the house of the Julii. Our beloved Octavia is leaving to go see Octavian now that he's in town, and insists that beloved mother Attia should come with her. Attia insists that Octavian's got to come to her. No way she's going out there. And Octavia's like, he's not going to do that. Octavia's like, well, what do you want me to tell Octavian? Do you want me to send your love? And Attia doesn't request Octavia to send her love. She instead says, tell him that he still has all their money and they want it back. So really loving maternal figure here. We're cutting back to the Collegium. It's been a while since you've been here. This is fun. I kind of thought it burnt down.
But yeah, yeah.
It is not. It's fine.
You can rebuild a building.
There's a merry bunch drinking, gambling, possibly even seducing. I don't know. I saw a lady on some guy's lap. Varinus and his party walk down the stairs, party being Pullo plus family, and the crowd falls silent as they see their leader, their ruler. I don't really know what power dynamic Varinus has to these people.
Their son of Hades.
Yeah. The crowd falls silent, and Irene runs up the stairs and comforts the little ones, Lucius and Varina the younger. Varinus goes on to explain the situation. He like in detail. He's like, yeah, my kids were slaves. Yeah, my eldest one. Yeah, she got prostituted out. You're going to treat them with respect or bad things are going to happen.
And he also just like, it's like, yeah, baby Lucius is my wife's child with another man. And I'm like, Varinus, why are you saying all this?
It's like,
how is this relevant?
You know, that was my gut reaction too. But with reflection, that is the most Varinus way to address all of this and get it out in the open.
Yeah, forthright.
I guess,
He's very blunt, and I also think that kind of adds more to his skill of intimidation amongst these people, because he has already freaked them all out by saying, I am the son of a demon. And so I think that pretty much anything he says now, and even if it is in the most blunt fashion, it could literally just put the literal fear of God in these people if Varinus threatens them in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that outside of the part where he owns up to the thing about baby Lucius, because like I feel like him basically admitting, yeah, I got cucked by my wife, they're not gonna be like, wow, this guy's intimidating. Like, that's, I don't think it's gonna improve his standing in their eyes.
Sure. Yeah, not everyone seems super stoked about Varinus being back. There's a couple glances and faces that seem not too happy. I think it was probably Mashius we saw, who we'll talk about more shortly. Rena shows his family their new quarters. They aren't very auspicious, but he's like, hey, we'll sweep, we'll paint the place. It'll be great. Do you like it, Varina the Elder? And very obediently, with no emotion, she says, yes, I do like it. Rena's like, yeah, it'll be awkward at first. We've been away for a long time, but we'll get through it. We'll be a family, and we will not speak of the past. And again, yes, father, with no emotion. We are cutting to Octavian and Octavia chatting it up. Octavia's made her way over to the little war tent outside the city. They kind of start out like jabbing at each other, calling each other skinny. It's fun. The family love is rekindled, platonically. Octavia lies and says that Adia sends her love. Octavian, being the smart man, he is like, does she? Octavia's like, she has this silly idea, you should come to her. Octavian's like, she'll grow old alone then. Octavia's like, come on, would it hurt? Octavian's like, bro, we both live with her, she's a terrible mother. I'm not, you saw all that stuff that happened, it's not happening. She told Antony to beat me. And Octavia, like, they go back and forth about this for a while. And Octavia's like, she's scared and lonely, she doesn't have Antony. And Octavian's like, whoa, I thought that you, Octavia, my sister, would be on my side. Octavia's like, there's no sides, you're my brother, I love you. And he's like, Antony beat me, her sweat was on him. And Octavia's like, oh, don't be so pious. And she has a point for someone who seduced his own sister. Don't be so biased. You just, and to go on, she says, you just threw the family in debt so you can play soldiers. Don't be angry. Come home. And then Octavian's like, I'm not going into the city until I'm ratified as consul, but, and I don't expect you to like care about these things, but please don't speak of me in public with nothing but respect. And again, she's like, well, you're my brother. Why would I do that? Of course I'm going to speak about you with respect.
I got a lot of what Octavia was saying here. I didn't like how hard she seemed to be like batting for Adia, because it's like, oh, Adia's scared and alone. And it's like, were you scared and alone after she had your husband killed? Why are you still on her side?
Yeah,
100% agree.
I agree with that, Cole. I also wanted to add, I'm already blanking on this actor's name already who plays an older Octavian, but I do want to give him a lot of props here for, he plays off the fact that Antony and Adia beating on him in the earlier in this season, he plays off pretty well despite him not being the actor that was actually playing Octavian in that episode.
It's convenient you bring this up, BP, because it actually was kind of at this point I decided I don't like the new guy. I don't know what it is. I'm just not a fan.
There is something, there is a criticism that I do have about his performance that I do have as a note later in the episode, because there is a moment where I'm starting to kind of not vibe with him as much, but I think this scene he does step in pretty well.
Sure, absolutely.
He seems a little dead-eyed in a few scenes I've noticed.
Mm.
Oh, I got a comparison. Y'all are better be ready for it.
VP, I look forward to this because you seem confident that we'll all understand this comparison intimately, and I don't know if we're going to be able to pull that off.
As long as it's a TV show, I've seen every single TV show that's ever been made. So this goes on a little bit more. Basically, Octavian just like basically says goodbye, and he does it in a very loveless way. He's like very formal. And he's like, well, thank you for visiting. I will see you again soon when I'm not so busy. And Octavia leaves in a huff. She's like, what a stupid you've become. And I think it actually kind of gets to Octavian a little bit. He kind of shrinks in his seat as Octavia leaves. But then we cut to the Collegium. The man running the Collegium in Varinus' stead, Massius is his name, is discussing business with Varinus and Pullo. Varinus is like, all right, here's how things are going to go now that I'm back. I'm number one, of course. And Pullo's number two, of course. You, Massius, you're number three. And Massius is like, yeah, at first he like accepts it. But then he's like, well, actually, after all I've done, I think it would be just if I was number two. And Varinus is like, oh, you want just? You're in the wrong spot. You'll be number two once Pullo or I dies. And Pullo's like, I think Varinus will die first. A white cloaked figure walks down the stairs, and it appears to be Lighty. And it is Lighty. She's now serving at the Temple of Ordono, and she's just checking in on the children. She's curious. Varinus is like, they're well enough, you know, considering. But hey, don't you take them away. They're staying with me. And then it cuts to the family quarters. The young children excitedly greet Lighty. Varina the elder kind of seems detached from existence in the corner. She does eventually get up and embraces Lighty. Yeah, well, let's stop there so I can give three words about Massius.
Yeah, definitely. Massius is probably someone we should have talked about earlier in terms of a little bit, but I think now he finally gets a little teeth or motivation that's a little previously unseen. So, Jacob, three words that you would use to describe Massius.
I say Massius is prideful. agitable and diligent.
Agitable as in agitation?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
He's prideful because obviously he's worked in this place for a long time now. He's done a lot of work and, you know, he's like, I deserve some respect. And then he does. Agitable because, like, this very clearly upsets him. And even just like Varinus is coming back, we saw it on his face that like he wasn't too stoked about it. Understandably agitated, but quick to it. But also I say diligent because obviously like he's a man of his work. And he's like, he's been taking care of the Collegium while everyone's been gone. And he's a man of business.
Yeah, because like he went from Polo looking at the burned down remnants of some building in their territory, and then Polo takes off to help out Varinus and stuff. And months later, Massius all on his own is apparently holding his ground in the gang war. So it's like, wow, he kind of steadied this ship, I guess. Okay.
Mm-hmm. BP, did you have something?
I did. I don't know if anybody else just loved this guy who's kind of like the highest employee of this business for them, is already not obeying commands of Massius and is already going back to listening to Varinus or Polo first.
It's a good observation, BP, because like, I mean, in a lot of like little cutaway shots, we see Gaia seeming kind of flirtatious with Massius and like, as you said, now not really listening to him as much. So yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm.
So then I think a little bit of time has passed. We're outside of like the house quarters in the Collegium and kind of back to the main place. Polo is gazing at Irene as she is washing some chalices, doing some dishes, whatnot. Polo's like, hey, you should come to bed. But uh-oh, Irene is crying. Polo's like, what's going on, my little princess? Did someone treat you bad? You know what'll happen if they treat you bad. He's like, never mind. And then they get into what is just a beautiful example of effective communication. And I actually wanted us to read this scene. So in my head, BP, you're Polo, but who wants to be Irene? Any volunteers?
I can be.
Excellent. Okay, so Kay is reading for the part of Irene. BP, you're reading for Polo. I should probably zoom in for you guys so you can see a little easier, right?
Jacob, I think
these are reversed.
Yeah. I'm just like,
sorry. I just kind of went automatically down the list. They are reversed. You guys are wise. You'll figure it out.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I'll need to start. Okay.
Technically.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Actors, whenever you're ready.
Why do you leave me here for Varinus?
He needed my help. I couldn't let it die. The children.
Varinus, him you love.
Me? No, no. You? Yes.
He more?
No, no question. If both of you were drowning in the river, I'd save you first. No question.
Swear?
I swear. You're half his weight.
Half?
Half his weight. Not so heavy. Easier to save. Never mind.
And I'll read the stage directions. The two of them kiss and Polo moans.
BP.
So,
me when I saw Florence Pugh and Oppenheimer.
Okay. Oh, gross.
Cut the whole bit.
So yeah, just a beautiful shining example of that relationship and how just effective they are together. How good they are together because they communicate so well.
They've come very far from him murdering her husband.
Yeah.
I joked that Polo is the best liar because I think he secretly does love Varinus more.
I think it's very obvious he does. Let's press on. We cut to Octavian's war tent, and what do you know? Adia walks in and she kind of looks at like almost a little stupefied or just in wonder as she gazes upon this kind of older Octavian, and she like comes in and she begins to cry and like get on her knees and like ask for forgiveness. She's like, I'm so sorry for like going with Anthony. I cast him aside. Please, please, oh God, forgive me. And Octavian's like, okay, yeah, I accept your apology. And they like hug, but like we see both sides of the hug. Octavian like doesn't look so sure about this at the embrace, and we cut to Attia's side, and Attia looks like a little deceitful on the other side of this hug.
I was just disappointed in Adia and myself, because I kind of bought it at first. Like when she was like doing the whole thing, I was like, I was like, considering before she was so upset about how like things turned out with Octavian, I was like, I kind of believe her here. But then it was like, well, I forgot who she was.
I knew as soon as she walked in that something was up. I wasn't 100% sure what it was. I know we do find out later in the episode, but it was just kind of like, what is Adia's game here? Because there's no way she would turn a dime on this. And lo and behold, she probably really didn't. She's just doing this for her own political gain.
As she always does. Cut to the house of the Julii. Atia is returning with Octavian, and Octavia is baffled. She's like, whoa, Octavian's here. But they seem like happy, genuinely, to see each other in their home. And they hug, and Atia stares on and again has a conniving look in her face. Cut to a man with a chicken. He is letting blood from it as a part of a ritual to remove the dark spirits that have found Varinus's children. He like pours it in a bowl and slaps it on their faces, and it's a lot of blood. I was like, dang, that's a lot of blood. So Varinus, yeah, he like is thanking the Lord for bringing his family back to him, and he renounces the darkness and promises to follow the path of light. And there's this it's uncertain scene at the end here where we have close-ups on three faces on Lyti, Varinus, and Varina the Elder, and their eyes are all like darting around. It looks like they're staring at one another, but we never get any clarity on who's looking at who. Is it Lyti looking at Varina the Elder? Is it Lyti looking at Varinus? Is it Varinus looking at Varina the Elder? It's who knows? Not me. Cut to Antony's war camp. Commander Lepidus walks in to speak to Antony. We don't know why. We just know he's been sent up by the Senate, but we quickly find out because Lepidus says he has seen better days. And Antony seems really happy to see him. He like immediately like brushes his guard away. So they share a drink, and we discover that Lepidus's men deserted him to join Antony's side, like pretty much all of them. And Antony goes on, he's like, yeah, I gotta thank Cicero in the Senate for providing me with so many troops. And Lepidus is like, I didn't know you were so popular with the rank and file. Antony's like, well, Lepidus, you're maybe just too aristocratic for the soldiers. And Lepidus kind of agrees he might be. But Antony is like, well, what should I do now? You know, I should kill you, but no, I don't want to, but I can't just let you go.
What to do? What to do?
What to do? And so he's like, Lepidus, will you serve as my second in command? And Lepidus is like, oh, it's a very generous offer. He pauses to think. And Antony kind of doubles down more firmly. Now he's like, it's a yes or no question. And Lepidus is like, well, I can't really say no, can I? And Antony's like, no, you can't. Cut to Pullo and Octavian walking around Rome. They're discussing Pullo's marriage. Octavian's kind of like, ah, marriage, what a foreign thing to be bound to someone. But then, you know, as they talk more, he's like, oh, Pullo's like, do you ever think about being wed? And he's like, oh, I'm thinking on it. They walk into Octavian's home. I think, I can't remember where this is. But they walk past a bust of Caesar, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's well, he inherited Caesar's house, I think. It's Caesar's
Oh,
villa.
duh. Yes, it is Caesar's villa.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Octavian asks about Varinus's family. Pullo's like, yeah, they're fine. Varinus himself. Pullo is like, oh, you know, Varinus, he is under loyal service to Antony still, but he will do what's best for the city and he will keep the peace. Octavian is like, oh, I'm very grateful Varinus will keep the peace, but like, I hear there's violence in the Collegia. Pullo's like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll take care of that. That's no biggie. And Pullo's like, but, you know, Varinus is like loyal to Antony. And if he were to like, you know, that guy up north were to come back with like armor on, you know, to say like, you know, to battle, like Varinus, who knows? And Octavian's just like, well, then we shall hope for the best. And you know, then Pullo leaves and he's like, Octavian, you did a good job. This is a nice place you got here. Cut to the Senate chambers. Our boy Cicero is soliloquizing. He is indicating to the Senate people that they're going to be swearing in the youngest consul in the history of Rome. And as he says that, the young Caesar himself emerges and finds a seat and gives a speech. And he's a graceful leader. He takes this opportunity not to speak of himself, but to honor his dead father, Caesar. He's like, oh, my time as consul, usher in moral virtue and dignity and debauchery and chaos will end, and Rome will again be as she once was. And he declares his first act, which is declaring Brutus and Cassius murderers and enemies of the state, which is a bit of a surprise. Go ahead, Cole.
I just want to say, am I misremembering, or isn't it supposed to be a thing where there are supposed to be two consoles, correct?
There are supposed to be two consoles, Cole. That is correct. Unfortunately, the two consoles were killed, and Cicero's backhanded dealings made Octavian sole consul with, no equal check on power, theoretically.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify because I wasn't sure what had happened with that rule.
So this news of Brutus and Cassius being enemies of the state, it's a little catch people off guard. The Senate is mumbling. I don't know if it's going over smoothly. Cicero, he's certainly surprised. He gets up, confronts our young Caesar, and is like, "This is not what we'd agreed upon." And Octavian, very coldly, very sternly, is like, "Step away from my chair." And the crowd like falls silence. And Octavian stands up and he like begins this big speech. He's like, "My father died on this floor right there, stabbed 27 times, butchered by many called his friends. Who will tell me that that is not murder? Who will tell my legions who love Caesar, that that is not murder?" And as he's saying this, his legionnaires walk in and they partially unsheath their swords. And then Octavian, very stoically and very scarily, says, "Who will stand against the motion?" And the camera pans as Octavian stands in the foreground, and we see the entire Senate chambers either take a seat or already sit silently as no one opposes it. Yikes. Big dog move from the young dog himself.
Anthony wishes he could have done that.
Yeah. So then we cut to the future. Now empty Senate
Oh,
chambers. Go ahead, BP.
this is the reason why I am not super crazy about this new Octavian now, and it is because of the way he delivers his lines. It is in many ways severely more monotone compared to younger Octavian, which I get you are wanting to make the character older, a bit more mature, but, and I don't mean this as a compliment, it low key kind of sounds like Bran Stark in the later seasons of Game of Thrones. Very bland, deadpan. And that first scene, I thought he did a good job. But then this scene, I was just kind of like, I don't even know if I'm on board with this now because of how this is going.
As someone who's seen Game of Thrones, I understand what you're talking about.
I gotta say, I feel like Octavian has like always been pretty stoic and kind of monotone.
I feel like the other actor at least put a lot more inflection and emotion in a lot of other moments versus this new one.
I like BP. I do. I'll say I like at least 70% agree with you. I think you could say within the context of the scene, this young politician is speaking before this prestigious body for the very first time, and he comes across as a cold, calculating politician. Maybe that's what he wants to do. It's all theater for him. I mean, you could play that on a meta level throughout this entire show, I guess, but maybe that is one of the reasons that I miss our young Max Perkins Octavian, but.
Boyish charm. Cut two, the now empty Senate chambers. Cicero is alone and distraught. His servant asked him if he'd like some tea. He's like, yeah, if it's henbane, which I think is a joke that, yeah, if I would kill myself, please.
I looked it up. It's nightshade, apparently.
Yeah, that I think that's what I remembered. Because he's been outmaneuvered by a child, but he does devise a plan. He tells his servant to pen a letter to Brutus and Cassius. His servant's like, but Cicero's like, no. I demand that you write. And he begins to pen this letter, Heroes of the Republic, greetings. And it fades off, and we cut to the Collegia again. That one lady, Gaia, she's collecting plates and sinks. As she leaves, Rena the Younger wanders out and, digs into the coin box, steals some money, brings it back to Verena the Elder. They have a small collection of coins, it kind of appears like. But Verena enters the door, so they kind of hurriedly throw it under the bed and they put away their things. They knock over this little elephant toy. That's Lucius's, but Verena doesn't really notice. He greets them, but like they kind of seem nervous. And so Verena's like kind of thinks there's something up, but he sees the elephant toy. He's like, "Oh, the toy's broken. I'll fix it. Don't worry, you guys. I'll fix it." And he's like, "Hey, wouldn't it be fun now that we're family again to go spend a day out in the country?" And no one says anything. He's like, "Would you like that?" And Verena the Elder says, "Yeah, if you'd like that, we'd like that, sure." In that same monotone, emotionless way.
I like how Verena's presented. It's like, what we haven't done in a while, family road trip, like the good old days and stuff. And within the context of the show, like that's never happened. They've never been wealthy. Verena's was gone for most of their lives. Like,
Yeah. But you know, this, if you like, is enough for Verena. So like, all right, it's a plan. And then as he leaves, Verena the Younger pantomimes spitting at him as he leaves through the door. Outside, Verena is now whittling a piece of wood to fix the toy as Gaia asks if he needs anything before she locks up. He's like, no. But she's like, it's good to have you back. And he's like, she's like, oh, you ever see a real elephant? He's like, yeah. Gaia's like, are they big? He's like, oh, yeah, they're pretty big. And so at the end of this stilted conversation, which Vrenus doesn't appear to want to be in, Gaia's like, just so you know, if you want me, you can have me. Vrenus like looks to her, looks back to the ground, kind of thinks for a second. His face really doesn't tell us anything. And she's like, or, you know, I can just leave. And after a brief, Vrenus is like, stay. Cut to the beast with two backs. They
I
seem to
don't.
be enjoying themselves.
Dear Lord.
And then
Just
we.
say they're having sex. That's okay, right? Like, God.
This scene, hilarious.
This is my funniest scene.
As Gaia goes to like kiss him afterwards, Verena's like immediately like, you can leave now. Take half the money on the table. And Gaia's like, there's gonna be a lot of beeps here, bleeps here. Gaia's like, F you. And Verena's is like, you haven't seen how much there is yet. Guy's like, I'm not a whore. Verena is like, why are you here then? She's like, I thought you liked me. And Verena's like, and you like me too, I suppose. And she's like, something like that. What a happy couple we'd make. Just take the money. He gets mad. He's like, hey, take the money. And she like finally obliges and leaves. And I want to make a note here. Verena's like kind of willingly engaging in prostitution feels to me like going against that prayer he just offered earlier, right? Like to shine away from the darkness.
Yeah,
So.
it's really interesting the fact that he insists that she takes the money so that this is not a relationship after Niobe, but more transactional for him. I mean, I feel like that could also cut into like this is Varinus keeping his honor in a way, I guess not cheating on Niobe with someone he loves, but again, a transaction as it were.
Very interesting. Many ways to cut this cake. We cut to.
If I believe this is Gaia's last scene, Jacob, so we'll actually have
Oh,
a
yes,
Cole, I
sorry.
believe,
Go ahead.
share three words that we might use to describe her, who we've seen around throughout this new season here, but has, I don't know, a lot more dynamics in this episode.
Sensual. Like she's always kind of like using her feminine wiles to try to get herself places. I've seen her like kind of working the men over to try to get what she wants.
Absolutely.
I also have stubborn. She was very insistent that she's not a prostitute. She does not want the money. It seemed like she really only took it because she was kind of worried that Varinus was going to physically attack her, which I was also wondering if he was going to do. My final word here is smart, because she runs basically like the brothel side of things. Like she's basically the madam. And I with Varinus, and especially with the stuff with Massius, is like when he's like, do you like me? And she's like, something like that. And it's like, no, I think she's just trying to shack up with the guy in charge so that she's safer and in more power.
That's
Very
why I was
true.
waiting to bring up why she was more respectful to Varinus in that earlier scene over Massius was because of that, Cole.
Cole, your list of men that she's kind of flirting with and stuff that you had implied existed. I assume that you have Massius on that list. I assume you have Arenas on that list. Is there anyone else you think is worth mentioning?
Not any named characters
Okay.
necessarily. I mean, maybe like I feel like she was maybe eyeing Polo a little bit later on.
Okay.
We cut to an orgy. There's a lot of naked women and a lot of weird dancing. Agrippa is here with Maecenas, who is smoking on something. Agrippa, this doesn't seem to be his scene. He doesn't seem to be a big fan. He says, hey, I'm leaving. Maecenas insists you should stay. It gets much better.
The next 10 minutes is just like my funniest one of the episode.
Oh
Like,
my
yeah,
God, it
same,
is
this rules.
incredible. This actually is the funniest scene that has existed in Rome so far. Agrippa's like, it's beneath us. We're seconds to the consul now. Maecenas is like, what's the point of being second to the consul if you can't have some fun? And so Agrippa, he's like leaving, and we see the camera fall on a smoking Octavia, who Agrippa kind of recognizes from afar. Octavia's there with Jocasta. Jocasta looks up. She's like, are the walls melting? Octavia's like, I don't think they are. And Jocasta's like, yeah, they are. She kind of pauses for a second, and she says, we should all die. And while this is happening, Agrippa, like, silently picks up Octavia and walks away with her. And, like, Jocasta turns around, and after saying, we should all die, Octavia's just gone, which frightens Jocasta, to say the least. Agrippa returns Octavia to the Julii house, you know, telling her servant, wash, put her to bed as quietly as possible, but not quite enough. Adia enters as Agrippa's trying to leave, insisting to know why he is here with her daughter. And Octavia pipes up immediately. He's like, he abducted me. And Adia's like, Octavia
trying to get Agrippa killed.
Yeah. Adia's like, well, it's funny that he abducted you just to bring you back to your mother.
Adia's so smart. Like, that's the most astute thing she's like ever said. That's just not mean. I love that so much.
Mm-hmm. So Adia's like, well, where were you really at? Agrippa's like, Octavia, you should probably just tell the truth. And begrudgingly, Octavia's like, I was at an orgy. And Agrippa's like, early stages of an orgy. Nothing happened. but this reassurance falls on deaf ears. Addie's like, this is all Jocasta's fault. What would Octavian think if he found out? He'll banish you at the very least. So Adia insists that Octavia must be banished, and Adia will go with her, and tells Agrippa to not speak of this to anyone. And Agrippa's like, oh, never, of course. And Adia's like, of course. What do you mean, of course? And Agrippa's like, because, because I love her. And Octavia looks up at him and just kind of like shakes her head slowly. She's like, you only say that because you don't know me. Agrippa's like, I know you well. You are kind, full-hearted, and beautiful, and I would tear down the sky if you asked me. And he also, like, at this point kind of pipes up to Adia, and he's like, and if you ever speak to her again like that in my presence, I'll I will be very angry. And Octavia kind of looks shell-shocked by this. I think Agrippa kind of won her over here. Okay, this is very funny. I don't want to just like immediately leave if anyone had any other comments about this. This seems so hilarious.
Agrippa, third time meeting her, absolute white knight, but not like in a toxic sense, I don't think, you know, just being a solid guy. Gosh darn it, himbo with a heart of gold. I can't say enough nice things about that man at the present.
Cut to Brutus receiving the news, the letter from Cicero. Cassius like, this is an outrage, this is a crime. But Brutus is like, no, Octavian has committed a blunder. The Senate believes they've created another tyrant with Octavian because of the display of force he showed. And Cicero's like, yo, you guys need to come back right now, like ASAP. And Brutus is like, the beauty of this all is that Antony and Octavian, they don't hate us. They hate each other. They're going to fight. And then all we have to do is pick up the survivors. And Brutus and Cassius kind of share this strong hug, knowing they're in this like this position of power. Cut to Varinus at a dinner table with strangers. Not strangers. These are the people the collegium have been like kind of at war with. It's Memio very tenuous.
And Kata, those ganglers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is silent until, you know, they kind of pour their drinks and they cheers Bacchus. And so they're like, oh, they sure come to small talk. They're like, oh, you're back. You found your children. And Varinus is like, yeah, let's make peace. Varinus is like, yeah, I spoke to the consul. He wants us to make peace. They're like, you didn't speak to the consul. And it's like, well, whatever, I did. Bloodshed is bad for business. And although I, Varinus, started it, I'm calm now. I see clearly now. And it's been enough. Many men have died. And for what? And, you know, you guys, if all three of the collegia are united, the lower collegia will have to kiss our feet. One of them, Memmi or whatever their name is, is like, all right, what terms do you suggest? And, you know, Varinus suggests whatever. They get to share the dock, something about some Ostians, whatever. The semantics of it aren't super important. And they tenuously agree on peace. And as Pullo and Varinus walk out in the street, Pullo's like, you know, they're going to think you went soft. And Varinus is like, oh, they might. But they will, as they fight over the spoils, at that time, we will recruit men and restore order. And on cue, cut back to inside. And one of the men is like, he's gone soft. And the other guy's like, I'm not sure about that. But do you want to split things 50-50? And then the other guy's like, no, I don't want to split things 50-50. Worked perfectly as Brina's plan. Cut to
Verena the Elder and Younger and Lucius launching their escape out the window. They make it out. They start running. They make it to Lyde, who they're like, hey, we just ran away. And Verena the Elder's like, we can't stay with that evil man. He killed Mama. Lyde's like, hey, listen, you got to. How are you going to protect yourselves? How are you going to care for yourselves? How are you going to care for your little sister? What will you do? You must stay with him. You may carry hatred for him, but you may never let him see. You must be an obedient daughter. Kneel to him. Tell him you love him. Your mother, Niobe, wants you to live, and this is your only chance, is what Niobe would have wanted. Verena the Elder's like, he'll know I'm lying. And Lyde's like, no. All he wants from you is your love and forgiveness, and he will thank the gods for eternity for that. Cut to the home of Octavian. Octavian and Cicero are having a stern conversation about, you know, Octavian and his legions and whatnot. And if we may, I would like for us all to read this scene. It is properly annotated. Cole, would you like to take up the role of Cicero again?
I would be honored.
Do we have a volunteer for the role of Octavian?
Sure.
And BP, you and I kind of have more minor roles in this. Would you prefer to be Agrippa or Masonus?
I'll be Agrippa.
And I'll be Masonus, whose name I say incorrectly every time. Actors, begin.
As leader of the Senate, I must ask, rather, I must formally demand that you surrender command of your legions.
You are speaking to the Consul of Rome.
Give him my army. Why would I do that?
The Senate feels that you have used your legions in a coercive manner against them. They're inclined to resent it.
I'm sorry they feel so, but with all respect, their resentment has no teeth. What will happen if I do not do as they say?
Perhaps they will throw their sandals at you.
Word comes from the east. Brutus and Cassius are returning to us. They bring with them 20 legions. How many legions do you have? 4, is it? I have no notion of their intentions, of course, but I suspect they're displeased to be named murderers and enemies of the state.
They were named so because they are so.
Be that as it may, if you were to disarm yourself, I might persuade Brutus to treat you leniently on account of your youth and inexperience. Let us not contemplate the alternative. A war between you and Brutus would be short and bloody.
Well done, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
And see.
Yeah. Really, really power move by Cicero here, really orchestrating things and kind of catches Octavian off guard, painting Octavian into a corner, and just some great dialogue, I thought. Octavian and his kind of council are kind of discussing what their next steps are, like what they should do. Agrippa's kind of like, well, surely he doesn't have 20 legions. Octavian's like, it doesn't matter if he has half of that. Like, we're still doomed. And they're like, well, what should we do? And Octavian, for once, doesn't know. He's like, I don't know. Which is like, that's a powerful thing. Octavian has always had a plan up until this point. And almost on cue, Adia enters to see these downtrodden men. She's like, has someone died? Cut to the house of Servilia. She's writing to Brutus, praying for success, sending him his father's ring, and she's dictating this letter, blah, 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 blah. And we fade to the troops of Brutus and Cassius marching across the land. Boom. Fade again to Mark Antony planning his assault on Rome with Lepidus and his men. Lepidus doesn't seem to like totally be on board with it, but he's not objecting outright. But there's commotion outside. Men are gathered and watching something entering the camp, and it is Attia, arriving on a white horse. She must now think that this is the politically advantageous move. Antony looks on confidently. Their stares connect. Attia teases that she's not sure about the beard. Cut to some pillow talking. Antony asks how she managed to get there, all the way to North Cisalpine Gaul alone. And Attia reveals coyly, oh, I'm not alone. And we cut to the morning. Antony steps out of his tent, and there at his doorstep are the forces of Octavian and Octavian himself. What does this mean? What does this spell? The two lock eyes and advance as Octavian gets off his horse, and they share a hug. Antony stares on the. We kind of have a similar moment where Octavian and Attia hugged earlier, and we saw both their faces. We do this again with Antony, and he stares on confidently, kind of feeling like, you know, this kind of small victory. And Octavian looks up to Attia, a little unsure.
Given that we have gone to the second scene of Lepidus, I would like to share my three words. Slight. Not in a good way either, because, I mean, a lot of the things that he seems that he wants to say would never really be taken into any consideration whatsoever. And then I would say also a little unmeritable, because he just seems very incompetent in a lot of ways, because he just kind of just seems like somebody that kind of just got random person picked from the crowd. All right, you're in charge now. And then he also just kind of seems like an errand boy.
Mm-hmm. Fair. We cut to the Collegia. Pullo, Varinus, Irene, whole family joking around. Gaia, she's pouring drinks. Varinus's family brings the food in. They all sit down for dinner. Varinus says the food smells delicious. And honestly, I was surprised with almost a twinkle in her eye. Varina the Elder says, "Thank you, Father. I hope you like it." And Varinus cheers to the family, and good vibes just abundant at the table. And we see a slow pan around to the back of Varina the Elder, where her fingers are doing something. I assume it's the Roman thing that's like similar to crossing your fingers behind your back. Obviously, she's lying. And with that, credits roll on episode 5, Heroes of the Republic.
Well, Jacob, thank you very much for leading that through here.
Gladly.
All right. Well, folks, we'll get into a little bit of a question time predictions here for BP and Cole. We are halfway through the final season here, essentially, and I don't mean to be a spoiler, but some character, at least one character that we saw this episode, is going to be dead by the end of next episode. So I'll let you think about the principal cast, basically any character we have named, I suppose, and took time to write 3 words about, essentially. And if you guys would like to compile a list as to who you think is kicking the bucket, I'd love to hear some predictions. I'd love to hear what you think the circumstances of their demise will be. Jacob, interesting history bits that stuck out to you this episode?
I mean, we were kind of schmoving through history a little bit, I kind of thought, honestly. Yeah. Let's see. I guess the most important ones to talk about are probably Octavian becoming consul, and Octavian and Antony joining forces to fight Cassius and Brutus.
Yeah, yeah. This episode presented it in a slightly different order to how it happened in history. And I had to review my DOTRR notes to double check the order here. So if you'll regale me a moment, I can explain the real way it happened, but how we ultimately arrive at the same place, essentially.
Yeah.
After the Battle of Mutina, Octavian's troops defeated Antony, and they were to be transferred to the command of Decimus Brutus, who is the rightful governor of Gaul that Antony was attacking in the first place. The problem was that Octavian's troops, a lot of whom were Caesar's veterans, refused to work for Decimus Brutus, one of the conspirators that stabbed Caesar. And so in that confusion and transfer of power and authority, Antony slips farther up north scot-free. He gets near Lepidus, who is just hanging out there and is not explicitly on a mission to kill him. And then Antony's reputation precedes him. Lepidus' troops defect there.
Yeah.
Octavian would ultimately maintain control of his troops over Decimus Brutus. Then he marches back to Rome, demands to become consul. The Senate grants it. Octavian becomes consul. He revoked Antony's status as an enemy of the state, and then he makes Brutus, Cassian, Sextus Pompey enemies of the state instead. He goes north and meets on more friendly terms with Antony and Lepidus, and they form up the Second Triumvirate, which is kind of what we see going down in this episode. So
that's so right. Oh my, I don't know how I forgot about that. In my head, I was like, did they actually join forces? But yeah, they absolutely did. I had a thought. I know this is like ahistorical, I'm pretty sure, in my recollection, but in my head, it maybe honors a bit of true history, because Octavia is like found at the orgy, right? And Addie is like, "Oh, we will banish you." And right, in my recollection, didn't that happen to like Caesar's daughter Julia?
Caesar's and Augustus's own blood daughter Julia, yes, because a lot of Octavian's career, well, especially after he becomes Augustus and whitewashing his past, he talks about piety and make Rome moral again and stuff like that, and his daughter is doing stuff like that Octavia is doing now, and he banishes her, he banishes his granddaughter, he banishes his great grandson Agrippa Postumus, named after his best friend. So yeah, he was quick to pull the trigger there in his later years. So yeah, great catch there, Jacob.
I'm on it.
Quick production note, Jacob and I proceed to talk about the then-recent film Oppenheimer until Cole and BP come back.
And I didn't realize Robert Downey Jr. played Levi Strauss, or whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I didn't realize that was him until after. He did really good.
Yeah.
Were you just blindsided by the fact that he didn't have a goatee?
I don't know. I don't know, people. I don't know. I couldn't pick Robert Downey Jr. out of a crowd.
All right, fellas. Well, Jacob and I have wrapped up our discussion of Oppenheimer this week. How about you guys, though?
You excluded me from the Okay, that's it.
I'm also joking, but
I quit.
Cole and BP, who is on your guys's death list, kill list, prescription list, as it were?
BP, would you like to say the two you or the one you feel about, and then I'll say the two I think.
I said three and you said one, and anyways, the one commonality that Cole and I had was Cassius. The one that I said first was Brutus and Cicero in addition to Cassius. I think all three of those are biting the dust.
Okay. Do you want to explain the circumstances of how you think they will die, BP?
I said Cicero was going to likely die because Octavian was going to figure out what Cicero was doing, being in contact with Brutus and Cassius, and he's going to have somebody take care of Cicero for him, because higher-up politicians never do their dirty work themselves. I think Brutus and Cassius are going to bite the bullet in battle.
Gotcha. How about you, Cole? So you also think Cassius, it seems like, right?
I said Cassius because things are not looking well for that side of the plot. But I was like, there's no way that Brutus dies and Cassius lives. So if only one person dies, like, okay, it has to be Cassius, because it wouldn't just be Brutus. But like, if it's, we've now brought up the possibility that it, more than one character could die, then I do think it would be both of them. Not necessarily at like the same scene, but by the end of the episode, I think they would both be dead.
Okay. Okay.
I think Cicero is going to be a later episode.
Okay. Okay. Cicero winning the game, in your guys' opinion. All right. Well, folks, we'll transition now to our least favorite moment of the episode, if there was any for you.
I do. And it is the very beginning of this episode, which is because there is absolutely no reason for it to be in this episode. I get that they're trying to set up Tywin's redemption, but the fact that he does not appear again in this episode, they couldn't have saved him for the next time they actually plan to have Tywin be a more vital role in the episode. I don't think it's like a terrible moment. I think it is just not good for this episode, not a good scene for this episode. And I think that it could have easily been cut or moved to a different episode.
Jacob.
I agree and disagree, BP, because I agree it was worse, is my least favorite. That's because it's the only time I see Tywin, and I decided I like that guy, so I wish there was more of him. But
to be fair, I'm not saying because it's a Tywin scene.
No,
it's
I know.
Because
Tywin
doesn't
totally
come back in this episode.
And let me say why that's wrong, too, because this is not the beginning of a redemption arc. This is a closure on a redemption arc. Because in the previous episode, we saw him ashamed of his culture and his heritage, right? And Levi was prodding and poking at him for that. And now he's returned to the faith and is praying in a synagogue. I assume that's what they're called. I can't remember. And I think it's good because of that.
Boom. Are you saying, Jacob, are you guessing that we're not really going to see Tywin after this?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone for good.
All right.
Who's he going to work for? Addy is up in Gaul.
Cole, did you have a least favorite moment?
Kind of, I guess. I don't know if I'd really classify it as least favorite. Just like it felt weird. The last shot with where it pans down, it shows Verena the Elder doing like the sign behind her back. That just felt unnecessary to me because like clearly none of us actually know what that is supposed to indicate. We all have like our assumptions about it, but they're not all like in line. So clearly like we'll have different like specific ideas of what that was supposed to be. So like they just showed that, but like they hadn't at any point prior in the show.
I think it's just, you know, trusting us to be smart enough to come to our own conclusion.
Well, I mean, that is also my point of like, why even have that? Like, because the last scene we saw of Verena the Elderin was Lydie saying, like, no, lie to Verenus and tell him, like, you love him, all that crap. So her saying, like, oh, yeah, thank you, Father, like, all, it's like, yeah, we know it's a lie. We don't need this, like, other, like, indicator that is, like, makes things a little less clear.
I would have believed her, should be told. I saw it twinkle in her eyes, like, oh, I'm ready for Verena to be redeemed.
Okay, that's my argument is rescinded because
cut to next episode, Verena the Elder in a synagogue next to Tymon.
My perfect scene.
All right, my least favorite moment was Octavia was in Octavian's tent and we did not get a shot of Agrippa hiding behind the curtains or nestled in some kind of chest or small cavity, breathing heavily.
Or like she leaves and he just like pops up behind the couch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't have a least favorite moment.
Which leads me to my favorite scene, and that is the scene where Agrippa finally got to confess to Octavia his feelings for her. It's just such a nice little, scene. It's not arguably the best scene of the episode, but it is my personal favorite.
Cole, favorite moment?
My personal favorite moment is the scene between Octavian and Adia when she comes to his tent, because I feel like there was like real humanity in Octavian in that scene where like she's on her knees like begging for forgiveness. Like I felt like Octavian is like he wants to have a good relationship with her. Like he wants to have like a good mom. Like he really wants that, and you can like see that in his eyes. And like he's been like beaten down and like kind of just like messed up over the course of the show like so much that, like we haven't seen any like he like lost his innocence and his kindness and everything. So like this felt like we still see a little bit of that. So I'm excited and also not excited for when he finds out about how insincere that was, and that just further destroys any shred of humanity he has left.
Jacob, you want to go with your fave?
I have a toss-up between three, so you go first, okay, and I'll pick from there.
I'm going to go with Adia's reintroduction to Antony, all ceremoniously striding up on that white horse with a little smirk on her face, a smirk on his face, because looking at that, you know exactly what's going to happen for the remainder of the episode, like what they're going to do, why she's there, especially after Deus Ex Machina-ing Octavian's problem in the previous scene. So it was just very nice and cinematic, I guess, as them getting back together and how like genuinely happy they seem to be back together, and it is to both of their political advantages. It's just, you know, classic Antony and Adia back at it.
I agree. That was one of the scenes up there for me, like especially when Antony and Octavian like reach out and grasp hands. It's like kind of strikes as a really big surprise and just a good moment. Between that, I was kind of torn between Octavian's speech to the Senate and Octavian and Cicero's discussion. And I'm actually going to choose Octavian's speech to the Senate because it just is so cold and calculated, and like he like obviously like thought circles around Cicero and played him like a fiddle. It immediately shows what Octavian is about, and he's like going to get what he wants. And like, if that means like threatening the Senate with violence in the Senate chambers, like he'll do it. And it was just really, really powerful. And I thought it ruled.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. But with that, folks, if you would like to learn more about the real history behind this episode, you can listen to Death of the Roman Republic, Chapter 15, Chaos is a Ladder. God, I hope this is the last time I have to tell you to listen to that one. My fellow hosts, what might you have to promote in your lives?
You can follow my podcast, BP Movie Review Hour, on Spotify, and you can follow me on X at BP Movie Review Hour.
Hello, I'm next. I've come to the painful decision that in the near future, I will be leaving the platform known as Twitter. So don't follow me there.
Yeah,
we're going to Threads.
Instead, I would like to offer you life advice. This week, go outside, look at a bird for at least 2 minutes, write notes about that bird, ask questions about that bird, learn about that bird.
Ask Jacob what kind of bird it is.
Yeah.
Is this Jacob's like soft launch of a new social media platform? Like, what's his angle?
No, he's moving to Threads.
Here's the thing. I'm hearing Twitter is open, so I'm hitting the bird market hard. That's all I got.
Cole, what kind of sentient life do you want to promote? That's not, I don't know. I didn't frame that well.
Birds, I guess. I'll double down. Birds are pretty cool. So stare at the birds an extra 2 minutes for me.
Okay. Well, with that being said, Friends, Romans, countrymen, I hope you enjoyed the show.